questions that people ask, and they ask them at reasonablefaith.org. Dr. Craig, we want to address these questions, and these are representative of many questions that we get that we're kind of compiling here. We have a lot of material on these questions, and so it's our pleasure to kind of reiterate and expound on what we have as far as resources at reasonablefaith.org through your work, through your books and writings and your lectures. On the Kalam cosmological argument, this gets asked a lot, and it's how you reconcile God's omniscience, that he knows all truths, that he knows all truth propositions, that he knows all, and infinity. Because the Kalam cosmological argument, he says, Dr. Craig, says that you cannot actually traverse an actually infinite number of moments or things or marbles or coins. And yet, if God knows all, and if there are an infinite amount of moments from here on out, then how can God know all that infinity of moments? Do you see where he's going here?
Yes. And the question then is, in virtue of God's omniscience, does an infinite number of things exist? Now, I don't think that divine omniscience and God's foreknowledge of an endless future implies that an actually infinite number of things exist. First, the events themselves don't actually exist. On a tensed theory of time or a dynamic theory of time, according to which temporal becoming is real, future events in no sense exist. The future is a realm of pure potentiality. And these events will exist, but they do not exist. The future is potentially infinite in the sense that infinity is a limit which the series of events endlessly approaches but never reaches. The number of events from any point in time forward, that is to say later than that moment, will always be finite but growing with each successive moment. So the future is potentially infinite. There is never an actually infinite number of events in an endless future. Now, what about God's knowledge of what will happen, however? Are there an infinite number of items of God's knowledge? Well, again, that's not obvious to me. This seems to assume that God's knowledge is propositional in nature. That is to say, that what God knows is an actually infinite number of future tense propositions. But the difficulty there is that it assumes that God's knowledge is propositional in nature. And I don't think that's incumbent upon the theist. In fact, the classical theist has typically denied that God's knowledge is fragmented into propositions, into individual bits of information. Rather, God's knowledge is a seamless whole, an intuition of all reality and all truth, and is therefore non-propositional in nature. We finite knowers fragment God's infinite propositional knowledge into an infinite number or a potentially infinite number of finite bits or propositions. But that represents simply our finite expression of what God knows, not the medium by which God himself knows them. And therefore, the number of propositions that exist, if propositions exist at all, would simply be potentially infinite as human cognizers come to formulate and know more and more propositions. But there's no reason to think that God's knowledge has to be propositional in its structure. If it's not, then I don't see that there's any collection of things that is infinite in number. Neither the events themselves are actually infinite in number, nor are the items of God's knowledge actually infinite in number. So there just isn't any case here of an actually infinite number of things, and therefore it's not a counterexample to the argument.
This seems to answer objections to God based on his future knowledge throughout future events, and also prior to creation, prior to the Big Bang, causally prior to the Big Bang, what God was doing throughout all eternity. If you can't traverse an actually infinite number of things, well then God was thinking thoughts all this time prior to creation, and he was thinking an infinite number. But God doesn't, are you saying that God doesn't think thoughts successively one after another like we do?
Well, that would be entailed in what I'm saying, that the universe, or rather the series of past events, which could include mental events, in God's mind, must be finite and have a beginning. It will get you back to an absolutely changeless state in which there is no succession of before and after. And that would include in the mental life of God himself. God would exist changelessly sans the universe, without the universe.
Mm-hmm. This also brings up a good definition of what we mean by omniscience and omnipotence and so on. It doesn't entail the impossible, and we always say square circles. It's God cannot make square circles because it's nonsense, because it's an impossibility, and God doesn't do what is logically impossible. And so a lot of people have the idea that omnipotence or omniscience means that God's knowledge and God's power even extends to the logically impossible. And that's not necessarily true.
No, of course not. And what I would say with respect to omniscience is that when we define omniscience in terms of God's believing only and all true propositions, what we're expressing there is not the medium or the mode of God's knowledge, but simply the extent or the breadth of God's knowledge, that there is no proposition that we could enunciate that would be true, that would be outside of the purview of God's knowledge. He would know it. But that doesn't mean that this is the mode of his knowledge. The mode of his knowledge, I think, is non-propositional, even though we express it in terms of its extent by saying he knows all and only true propositions.
Here's another question. Dr. Craig, I am taking philosophy of physics class. Uh-oh. My professor claimed that due to relativity of simultaneity, it follows that past and future are illusions. Therefore, he concluded that change does not exist, and we live in a fatalistic block universe. He then claimed that there is no free will in such a universe, and therefore, even if God exists, he cannot charge us for our sins, since it could not be otherwise. What's all this about a block universe?
Well, that's basically the tenseless theory of time, Kevin, or the B theory of time. You can think of B and block as related. It means that all events in time are equally real, that the universe is a four-dimensional space-time block. And the difference between past, present, and future is just an illusion of human consciousness. So when this professor said that the past and the future are illusions, he didn't mean that they're unreal. Quite the contrary. On his view, what we count as past, present, and future are all equally real. There's a block, a four-dimensional block that is the space-time reality. And it is the perception of some events as past and others as present and others as future that is merely an illusion of human consciousness.
As we move along the timeline?
Well, that movement is itself an illusion. You see, we don't really move. It's just that there are different stages of yourself at different coordinates or locations in this space-time block.
Again, this is
and
on
so
the
there's B. There's the illusion of movement.
And this is on the B theory.
This is the B theory or block theory of time and the universe. That's right.
And the B theory is not right.
Well, let's put it this way. For the purposes of this question, it is certainly not implied by relativity theory, as this professor would have the student believe. That is simply naive and mistaken. The relativity of simultaneity that the professor talks about is a feature of the special theory of relativity only, Einstein's theory that he developed in 1905. But that theory is superseded by the general theory of relativity, Einstein's gravitational theory. And in the general theory of relativity, there is a time parameter, which is not simply one of the dimensions of this four-dimensional block, but is independent of the spatial coordinates and which measures the duration of the universe as a whole back to the Big Bang. So when we say that it's been 13.7 billion years since the beginning of the universe, we are not expressing a merely relative time from our frame of reference. This is expressing the absolute duration of the universe in what is called cosmic time. So the professor has simply ignored the general theory of relativity and focused only on the special theory. Worse, even in the special theory, it is not true that the special theory entails a block universe. In my work, Time and Eternity, the book published by Crossway Press, I go into this in some detail and show that on a non-Einsteinian or Lorentzian interpretation, you can say that there is a preferred frame of reference which measures absolute time, that is to say, time that is not relative to the reference frames of different hypothetical observers in relative motion to one another. And in this preferred reference frame, you can have absolute becoming, you can have real present with genuine pastness and genuine futurity and genuine temporal becoming, and there's no problem whatsoever. And what is admitted on all sides, Kevin, is that a Lorentzian interpretation of relativity theory is empirically equivalent to an Einsteinian interpretation. That is to say, they make all the same empirical predictions. They are indistinguishable, even though they have vastly different ontologies, that is to say, structures of the nature of space and time. In fact, if anything, the most recent experimental evidence tends to favor a Lorentzian interpretation of relativity, because we do seem to have some good evidence for an absolute frame of reference.
Now, his final question seems to follow from everything that you've said up to this point, Bill, and we have other resources on the A theory and the B theory of time. And once you start getting this down, it's not difficult. My 14-year-old son, who's a genius, by the way, is so fascinated with time, and he's getting a lot out of your work on time. I got him Time and Eternity.
Great.
And so on. And so he's just eating it up.
Yeah.
But the writer here asked a final question. Can free will be consistent with the block universe? I'd like to know that, too. I mean, if a B theory of time were somehow true, would free will exist?
I think it definitely could exist. And here again, I think this professor is simply mistaken in thinking that a block theory of the universe implies fatalism. Freedom of the will, or libertarian freedom, means freedom from causal constraints. And the events that exist in a B theory could be completely causally indeterminate. They could be quantum events that are completely undetermined by antecedent states of affairs. And the fact that they exist in the future doesn't mean that if we were to take different decisions now, that those events would not exist. So it's the same fatalistic fallacy that is committed by people who think that divine foreknowledge implies that there's no freedom of the will. They think that because God foreknows something and that it will exist, that therefore it necessarily will exist, that it's unpreventable and unavoidable. And that simply doesn't follow. That what is true is that if we were to do differently, then God would have foreknown differently, and the future would be different. Similarly, in this case, from the fact that the event will exist in the future doesn't imply that it will exist necessarily, or that it's unpreventable or unavoidable. Were we to choose differently, then that event would not be future, and so it would not be out there in the B theory, in the block. And so once you understand these counterfactuals, I think you can see that the B theory, no more than divine foreknowledge, implies some sort of fatalistic denial of free will. We have the freedom to determine the future, whether that future really exists is on the B theory, or whether it's pure potentiality is on the A theory.
Final question on this topic, Dr. Craig, is about quantum tunneling, which I think is something akin to tennis elbow. I'm not really sure. It says, my question concerns an issue that is often found floating about in the discourse concerning cosmology. In both the popular press and in the thought of some scientists, there is talk of a universe arising out of nothing through quantum tunneling. What is your take on this discussion?
I think he has reference here to Alex Vilenkin's model of the origin of the universe through quantum tunneling into being. If you look at Vilenkin's book, Many Worlds in One, he has a nice diagram where he describes how the universe could tunnel from a point of zero volume into a universe having some positive volume. And the mistake here, I think, that is made by Vilenkin is that he equates this point of zero volume with nothingness. And that's incorrect. A state of affairs in which the universe has a radius, even if that radius is zero, is not the same as nothingness. And with this quantum tunneling, the function is a two-valued function. That is, it is always from something to something. So it is not from nothing. There is always a prior state to a later state. And so these quantum tunneling models do not provide, in fact, a model of the universe coming into being from nothing, properly construed. It is always from something.
You hear this a lot. Quantum mechanics shows that something can come from nothing uncaused. Because what particles pop into existence and then go out of existence spontaneously? Mm-hmm. We've addressed that a lot, but that is the most popular objection.
Yes, it's a surprising objection because I think it's really quite a misuse of science, frankly. The theory here is that because of Heisenberg's indeterminacy principle, because of the uncertainty, a brief period of time is available for material particles to materialize out of the vacuum energy and then to go back into the vacuum and disappear again during that brief interval of time. It's permitted by this indeterminacy. But this is not an example of something coming from nothing. The quantum vacuum is a sea of fluctuating energy, a roiling sea of violent activity, having a rich physical structure and governed by physical laws, and it is not what the layman understands by a vacuum, namely nothingness. It is definitely a physical reality and is a precondition for these virtual particles materializing and then dematerializing again. So even if these virtual particle pair production is a matter of spontaneous coming into being, it is spontaneous, but it's not uncaused in the sense that it comes into being out of nothing. There are definitely causal conditions, preconditions, antecedent conditions that must be there in order for this to occur.
Can you expound just briefly as we conclude today, Dr. Craig, on Heisenberg's principle? We hear that a lot, and often it's just kind of a conversation stopper. You say that you know, universe couldn't have come from nothing uncaused and out of nothing uncaused. And they thought, oh, Heisenberg's principle. Well, they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, but the principle.
It's a bunch of laymen talking about stuff they don't know what they're talking
about. The principle of indeterminacy simply means that for certain correlated states of these quantum realities, we cannot determine both of them with specificity simultaneously. So that if you know, for example, the position of a particle, you cannot determine with accuracy its momentum. If you determine its momentum with specificity, then its position becomes uncertain. So that there's a sort of trade-off between these quantum properties. And people have argued about whether this is merely a result of our epistemic limitations, or is this ontic? Does this reflect the indeterminate nature of reality itself? But with respect to this question of things coming into being uncaused out of nothing, as I say, the indeterminacy that the principle allows permits, so long as it's in this tiny window of time, that the vacuum or the energy in the vacuum can fluctuate in such a way as to produce material particles, and then those particles have to vanish back into the vacuum again within this time interval that's permitted by indeterminacy. Otherwise, you would have a violation of the laws of quantum mechanics. But in this case, it is not a matter of events occurring without causes, because the quantum vacuum is itself the physical cause of particle pair production as a result of fluctuations of the energy in the vacuum.
I want to encourage people to get your booklet, God, Are You There?
for a good
perspective on these very difficult concepts that you've been discussing. That's available at reasonablefaith.org. Hey, it's coming down to the end of the year at the recording of this podcast, and you might want to get some last-minute giving in for the year. Please consider Reasonable Faith. We would love to have you as a partner, as a prayer partner, as a financial partner, as we expand Reasonable Faith and we continue defending the faith, answering the big questions of life, and providing resources that are just cutting edge today. Philosophy, theology, and apologetics. People need to hear from Dr. William Lane Craig, and you partnering with us can help us do that. Go to reasonablefaith.org, reasonablefaith.org for more information. I'm Kevin Harris for Dr. William Lane Craig, and we'll see you next time.